The world is full of lost girls, scores of them. Girls who disappear into the night, who inject heroin and fall off the map, who love other girls and come home to find their parents have changed the locks. Girls who run away, girls who are taken, girls full of sin, ones who like boys more than they love Jesus. Girls who are locked in basements and held until they give birth to more girls. The weight of them could drag a fleet of ships to the ocean floor. I know all about them. I've made it my business to know. The recording plays over the sound system of the crowded theater in Midtown Manhattan. The house lights are momentarily down, and on stage a logo of a retro radio mic, lit up in purple neon light, hangs above the proceedings. The crucifix in this particular church. People look for some of them. Sometimes there are police investigations, sometimes candlelight vigils, volunteer phone banks, pleading parents on local news. No one bothers to look for others. If they were rotten, or ruined, or from the wrong place, or from the wrong sort of family, they are allowed to slip away. For others still, no one even knows they are gone, because no one cared for them to begin with. My sister was lucky in that way, at least. She was loved. We looked for her. I don't think I will ever stop looking. I'm standing at the bar to the left of the audience when a man sidles up to me. I can feel it without having to look, like a little static pulse at the hairs on my arm, the kind of sixth sense you develop when you've had a life like mine. It's my talent, the one my friends would tease me about in college, saying I was a little bit psychic beneath it all. I'm not, of course. I just pay attention. By my count, my sister was the 16th girl lost in the 100-year history of Sutcliffe Heights, Illinois, one of two kidnappings, though the other was a 6-year-old, taken across the Wisconsin border by her father during a custody dispute in 1973. That girl was returned, unharmed, 2 days later, as soon as the police put out an APB. Most of the others were runaways, factory girls who worked in Chicago's nearby industrial yards in the early 40s. Bright teenagers sucked westward by the promise of California in the 60s. Nothing like Maggie. He orders a drink, a SoCo and Coke, and it clings to the ice in his glass with the stickiness of syrup. I know who he'll be without looking at him. If he'd ordered an IPA, he'd be one of the young producers, with a tweed blazer and an encyclopedic knowledge of audio equipment. Whiskey, and he'd be talent. An investigative journalist with a voice for radio, a bit better at talking than he is at writing. But Southern Comfort and Coke? He's an investor, the sort of guy who puts up the funds for a production company because he read that podcasts are becoming increasingly lucrative, and he doesn't have the head to navigate the tech industry. Maggie was lost on October 16, 1998. She got into a car with a man. Perhaps she knew him. Perhaps he had simply spotted her walking home that day. These are the things we don't know. Even the car was a mystery. A sedan that might have been blue, or gray, or silver. It was twilight, and difficult to tell, especially for an 8-year-old, especially a scared one. I took off as soon as Maggie let go of my hand. She stayed where she was, and I ran for home. I ran because she told me to. It was the last thing my sister ever told me to do.